Hello and welcome to another episode of On My Last Eggs. I'm Rachel, and like millions of other women worldwide, I'm navigating the wild throes of perimenopause.
One of my best friends is a sister in the second biggest accident emergency in the UK, and she didn't have that autonomy. She had to turn up every day.
I'll be lifting the lid on what that whole messy, confusing journey entails, with plenty of lols and some WTFs along the way.
Being a celebrity and going through menopause is very different to working on a production line, being a nurse, being a teacher, and going through menopause.
I'm very excited to welcome to On My Last Eggs this week, Helen Tomlinson. She is the woman who's been appointed by the government to be our new menopause employment champion. Helen, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Now, this is a really, really important topic, and it keeps coming up again and again and again, understandably. The impact menopause has on women in the workplace, and we're going to get into the details of that. But first of all, I want to ask you about your own menopause journey and if and how that impacted you in the workplace, because you're like a big cheese. You are the head of talent for the UK and Ireland for the Adecco Group, which is like a huge international group. So basically, it's like a super fancy employment agency as far as I can work it out, but like right top end.
Right top end, yeah. We are, yeah, one of the largest in the UK and Ireland and also globally. So yeah, we've got multiple brands beneath the Adecco Group that do a whole raft of different types of recruitment, but essentially we are a people business. We have 2,500 permanent staff, 35,000 associates, which you might know as temporary workers, but we call them associates, and obviously a huge client's base.
You're right at the top of your game, like a lot of women, if you know, hopefully might have got to at the point that the menopause hits.
It's generally when you've just got to the top of your game that your perimenopause or menopause symptoms start, which is really, really frustrating. But I guess I do think then part of the reason that I took this role. The role that I do or did at that point in time, because I would imagine you could probably say I'm post-menopause now, but I had choice. So as an example, we'll get right into it. One of my key symptoms, apart from the obvious brain fog just there, one of my key symptoms.
I mean, my brain fog's terrible as well. So we'll have to like limp through together, finding nouns along the way.
Yeah. So one of my key symptoms, other than the brain fog and the hot flushes, was incredibly heavy periods, which, you know, called flooding, which basically meant that I couldn't, there were days when I didn't even stand up, let alone go see a client or do a presentation. And that lasted for about 2 years. But I never really had a problem in managing my own calendar. I had the autonomy, I had the flexibility. I guess I had the seniority to be able to do that. But part of the reason that I took this role was because at the same time, one of my best friends is a sister in the second biggest accident emergency in the UK. And going through COVID, she didn't have that autonomy. She had to turn up every day without fail. I've got a friend who's a teacher. I've got friends who work in like outsourcing call center. They don't have that luxury. And I think it's really important to make sure that any provision, best practice, you know, suggestions work for any sector, top down, bottom up, because the challenges of being in a senior leadership role generally are more about that brain fog, loss of confidence, or I used to be really good at this. I used to be a big cheese, to use your words, but now I don't feel like that. So that
I feel like a baby bell now.
Exactly, exactly.
I'm a laughing cow of a cheese compared to how I used to be.
But that is the real problem that a lot I see women who, in you know, real basic terminology, were somebody but felt like they couldn't be anymore, and they had to step down, step away, change career, give up work altogether. And you know, that the loss of income, the loss of pension pots, you know, the headwinds for women are more than enough going through their career. And but add on to that the sudden feeling that I just can't do this anymore, so I'm going to have to get another job or walk away from my career. That's really challenging. But equally challenging is being faced with having to show up every day and deliver whatever your chosen career is. Arguably, some of those that I mentioned are way more important than doing sales presentations and talking to clients, but you've no choice but to do that. So the main reason I took this role was to speak up for women who didn't have the platform, the opportunity, or the confidence to be able to do that for themselves. So, I would say that whilst I did have some horrific symptoms, they were easier to manage based on circumstance than if I'd been in a different role.
Yeah, and you're right, based on circumstance, because you were able to manage it. I also had terrible flooding, and I was a radio presenter, and we used to present standing up. So I hear what you're saying about dreading standing up, because that's the point you get a flood. I'd already be standing, so I'd be speaking live on air, and I could feel the blood trickling down my legs. As soon as, you know, put a record on or whatever, you know, I would have to send an assistant producer out to buy me like new trousers or leggings. Obviously, if a real disaster happens, you can leave a live show, but you're kind of stuck there in it. And then I wouldn't be able to sit down, because obviously,
well, exactly,
leave a mark on everything.
Exactly.
So I really, really understand the flooding. And, you know, you're lucky that you could shift things around to avoid the time of your period. But that and hot flushes have to be, I think, the most embarrassing.
Absolutely.
If you want to try and hide your menopause, you can't with those symptoms.
Well, no, and that's a really good point. And that you asked me about my menopause, and I did have hot flushes. And at that time, I worked in an office where it was all glass. So it was like being sitting in a greenhouse all day. Mm. And one day I said, oh, I'm really hot and blah, blah, blah. And my manager, I'd come in the following morning, and my manager, who was a man, who, good on him for doing this, but he brought a fan in on wheels, and it was in my office.
Ta-da!
I know, exactly.
And it said, look what's happening to Helen, everybody.
Yeah, Helen's fan, do not move. So obviously everybody was starting to say to me, how come you've got a fan and I haven't got a fan, because I'm warm and blah blah. So I just kept repeating myself all the time, it's because I'm perimenopausal and I'm having a hot flush. And had I not been a confident person, that could have had a massive impact on me. They absolutely thought they were doing the right thing, but it could have had the opposite effect. And when I talk to employers about, you know, they want to make reasonable adjustments, they want to do something. Particularly, I find that when I talk to groups of men, they are very practical. They want to be able, they don't want to talk about it, they want to do something. So doing something without asking what it is that's going to help is probably could make the situation worse. So I always say, just ask the question, what is going to help you? Because quite honestly, having a fan on wheels that you have to pull around with you when you go to meetings, you may as well give them a t-shirt that says perimenopausal. But yeah, so those were my experiences. But just going back to that flooding piece, I did an article when I took this role, and the journalist interviewed me, and it was for the Times newspaper, and she said, I'll just talk, ask you questions. She pressed record, we started talking, and she asked me a similar question to you just did then, and she said to me at the end, do you want to take that out? And I thought for a moment, I was thinking, oh God. But actually I said, no, I don't, because if somebody reading that, and 44% of women have flooding as one of their symptoms, and that's probably the hardest thing to start a conversation with your line manager about, or even, you know, your partner or whatever. So I thought, I'll leave it in. And if that helps just one woman to read that and push it across the table to her line manager and say, that's what's happening to me, without having to really properly articulate it, I felt it was worth putting it in the national press that I had heavy flooding throughout my perimenopause. So.
Well done. I'm just going to give you, oh, that's not condescending, but it is difficult to put it out there. I mean, at least, you know, none of us have to tell our bosses about our dry vaginas, unless,
well, it depends what job you do, really.
It does, I suppose. And also how bad it is if you can't sit up, stand, you know, wear a uniform or whatever, because it can be that bad.
Absolutely. And a lot of organizations that do, you know, have uniforms, that is absolutely a consideration, which, you know, is a topic that is really difficult to discuss. But I was speaking to a large confectionery company yesterday, and they said one of their challenges is because it's confectionery, all their uniforms are white on the production line. So that right. obviously has a real impact to the point we've just been talking about. But also, if the line has to be stopped, the paperwork, the cost, and all of that is something that really you probably, unless you work in that industry, you don't really think about it. But the cost of having to do that is huge. So they can't really afford to stop those production lines. So there is a whole host of sectoral based challenges that you don't necessarily realize, and that's why my strategy for the work that I'm doing with the government is sector specific, because what's a problem in one sector may not be a problem in another.
Let's talk about your work then. Let's talk about the Menopause Employment Champion role. I think it's important to say this is voluntary, so it you're is. Not being paid to do this. I'll let that sit with people, what they might think. You know, you can make your own minds up, but you're not making any money out of this. You know, you're doing this because of your wealth of experience and your desire to help. Where do you start? You know, what is your kind of opening gambit for tone setting, possibly? You know, let's go to the fan on wheels.
It's really interesting that you asked me that, because my experience of doing that, when I really got into this whole sphere and got into this voluntary role, because I launched the Adecco Group's menopause policy on World Menopause Day 2021. And I thought I was doing a really good thing, but I absolutely naively thought, job done, we've got a menopause policy. And at that time, there were only 10% of employers that had one. And I felt like this was a real game changer. The only aspect of it was the game changer that started the conversation. So it allowed me to say the word menopause almost. And now, nearly 2 years down the line, if somebody came to me and said, can I see the menopause policy, please? I would massively feel that I'd failed. So that was kind of the first thing. Whenever a client comes to me, they say, shall we start it with a menopause policy? And you absolutely can, but it's how you do the preamble into launching the policy, how you land the policy, and then what you do afterwards that makes the big difference. And I would say it's only the catalyst to start the culture change. So don't assume that we've got a policy, we've sorted it, because that's absolutely not the case. But when I launched our policy, I did a podcast with some really senior leaders in our organization. We are 70% female in the Adecco Group from leadership level down. So I had a good range of colleagues who were prepared. I've known them a long, long time, been in this industry for nearly 30 years. And I just said to them, will you do a podcast with me talking about your menopause experience? We had a real range of, you know, brain fog, flooding, loss of confidence, weight gain, all of the above. And we did those podcasts and then put them on our intranet, and then we launched the policy. And then after that, we did line manager training, and we do inclusion brunches every week. And we do a different topic led by one of our four ED&I forums. And we did one on menopause. And that's what started the conversation internally. So I would absolutely say, kick it off with something quite bold. And if you haven't got a female leader in your organization that's prepared to open up that conversation, because it is, you know, brave thing to do, let me be that person for you and come in and start the conversation in your organization. And that really works in a very, whether it's a really male dominated environment or a smaller organization where you may be launching the conversation, then sitting in the canteen with them the following day. So it is really a little bit challenging if you work there all the time. And what I say is, you will never see me again. You can ask me anything.
I love
you,
that.
You won't embarrass me. And what tends to happen is it starts off talking about in the workplace, and then very often it starts to talk about relationships. And, you know, more and more I'm seeing a real step change, which is really heartening, in the men only safe space sessions that I do. I did one internally about 2 years ago. I had two men on it, and one had dialed into the wrong call and was too embarrassed to dial off. But And now I did one for DWP, and there were 500 male senior leaders on the call. And that's why it's such an exciting and evolutionary space to be in, because what worked 2 years ago or what didn't work 2 years is maybe working now. And so constantly thinking about those conversations, culture change, an allyship program, which is really important. That's part of my strategy for government. So a lot of large organizations have an allyship program, menopause champions, somebody to talk to, menopause friends, all that sort of stuff. So ours is called the Hot Topics Network. I had a meeting with a lady who worked in a small charity a couple of years ago now about something entirely different. And she said, I've got nobody to talk to because my line manager is a 32-year-old DJ. How do I start a conversation with him about my perimenopause symptoms? And that's one of the really key things. And that's why I'm looking at it from a sector specific, because if I, as an example, one of the sectors is hospitality. So if I work in a really big hotel chain, I've probably started the conversation in my organization. We're probably doing something. But what if I work in a guest house in Blackpool and I've nobody to talk to? So part of my strategy is to link them up with somebody in that large hotel chain so they've got some support across sector. Providing a safe space for people to talk is really important. Line manager training, incredibly important, because if we're empowering women and encouraging women to go to their manager and say, I'm perimenopausal, I just want to talk to you about this, the last thing we want is the manager not being able to handle the conversation or not being open to the conversation. So that manager training piece, incredibly important. So podcasts, launch, starting the conversation, safe spaces, all of those things all come before the reasonable adjustments, because actually there are often limited reasonable adjustments. So flexible working, free sanitary products, fans, you know, cotton uniform if you wear uniform, etc., access to drinking water, access to toilets, cold rooms, etc. Those are pretty much the majority of those potential reasonable adjustments. But if you don't feel confident starting the conversation, how do you start to say, this is what I need?
This is what I need. Yeah.
So the cultural piece underpins the whole of the strategy.
So you said when you launched your menopause strategy in your organisation that 10% of organisations had one, a menopause policy. Mm-hmm. I think that's 25% now, if mm-hmm. I'm right, which is good news. Mm-hmm. And that hopefully will get bigger and bigger. But we're still looking at the statistic that 25% of women in menopause consider leaving their job. You know, they may not leave their job, but that's how bad it's got. A job that they've loved and, as we discussed, have probably worked hard to get.
Yeah.
And they think the kids are probably, if not gone, they're more self-sufficient. They probably think, here I am, I can do everything now. And then suddenly, tough times. What I'm thinking about with the government is the fact that in January, they voted against, they blocked the idea of making menopause a protected characteristic, because without wanting to be negative, because obviously it's a very positive conversation and everything you're saying sounds fantastic, that employee you talk about who's going to struggle to go to their line manager, who might be a young guy, and, you know, have that conversation, and they have that conversation and say, you know, I have flooding, for instance, a difficult conversation to have. And, you know, would it be okay for me to maybe, you know, work half days that week, or, you know, or leave if I have to, or be in a space on my own or whatever? And they say, no, absolutely not. I mean, I don't know a lot about employment laws, and you probably know an awful lot about employment laws, but it feels like there's no safety net still for a lot of women to have those conversations. The fear is that you will be, unlike saying I'm pregnant, that the fear is that you will put yourself in jeopardy.
No, I take that point. It isn't part of my role to comment on that decision. I have to be impartial in my role. But what I would say is that every case that has gone to tribunal previously has been based on age, sex, or disability. So there is protection in that. And I think it was more that the government said they couldn't look at it now because it was part of a much broader conversation around the Equalities Act that obviously came in 2010. So it probably needs reviewing anyway. And to just do it for one additional protected characteristic would probably not be the right thing to do and do a wholesale review of the Equalities Act. But I think, you know, from a protection perspective, there is age, sex and disability. However, obviously, I would prefer it that it never got to that, and that education piece and that cultural change in organisations, you would like to hope. My biggest wish that in a generation, we're not having a conversation like this. We're not having a podcast about menopause, because it would just be like having a podcast about pregnancy or something like that, because it's just such part and parcel of a woman's life and career.
You talked about being a big confectionery organisation, and you know, you mentioned the sectors that you're working in.
Yep.
What are the other sectors?
So the sectors are hospitality, adult care, retail, manufacturing, professional and technical, and I want to look at education, because I'm concerned that 98% of primary school teachers are female.
And did you pick those sectors, and were they picked because they are sectors that have predominantly female employees in?
Partly, yes. So I work with government to look at the largest sectors and where we could have the most impact. What I was also really keen to look at was the sectors where there are multiple sectors in one organization. So when you look at large organizations, actually a lot of them have professional and technical, often some retail aspect to it. So it was looking at where we could have the most impact. The other area I want to look at as well is, and it's part of my strategy, there are 630,000 women on universal credit between the ages of 45 and 55. And if you've been out of work for any period of time, it is challenging coming back into work from a confidence perspective. If you've then gone into perimenopause in that period of time, it's doubly challenging. So we need to ensure that perimenopause is not a barrier to return into the workplace for those women.
That's a really interesting point. So how would you reach those women and have that conversation?
So part of the recommendation for this role was written by the 50 plus choices group at DWP. It's a pilot program that is working with people who are 50 plus and who are looking to come back into the workplace. So when they go in for their job search session, their meeting with their work coach, they are talked to about various things and ask them, you know, what their barriers are to work, etc. And they have menopause coaches in those job centres. So the coaches are trained in menopause to be able to have the conversation and signpost to that level of support. And part of the third aspect of my strategy is to look at the menopause pledge or an accreditation and encourage employers to undertake the workplace pledge, which will encourage women to come back into the workplace and go work for a menopause friendly employer. Because if I was in that situation and I had to choose a new employer, or I'm working with the national accounts team at DWP as well to encourage employers to do it, so that there are employers out there who are open to people coming back to work for them who are going through menopause.
That's a great idea, having, you know, a list where you can see who's kind of menopause friendly to begin with. And then it's an incentive, isn't it, for employers as well.
Absolutely.
To make sure that they, you know, are on that list. And so how do these conversations start with these employers? Are the employers scrambling to get you involved, or is it the other way around?
Well, I am fairly busy. Let's just put it that way.
I was going to get to that as well. How much time have you got for this? You're already a big cheese.
So twofold, really. And we are involving the sector bodies in that as well. So part of that 50 plus choices report was involving the sector bodies anyway. So as an example, for the hospitality sector, we're working with UK Hospitality to have, because they're already having conversations with employers, and we'll have a cross-sector roundtable in July, pulling some really key employers together who are doing some great stuff that are willing to share it with other organisations. Because I'm really keen for this to not be about competitive advantage. It's about making the world of work better for women, regardless of where they work and who they work for. So pulling all those employers together, and then we will have sector-based roundtable working groups that are supported by the sector bodies who lead those particular sectors. And so far, I've not had any employer say to me, I'm doing some great stuff, with regards to period management, women's health, menopause in the workplace, but I don't want to tell you about it. So employers are really keen to come forward and share on this really important topic.
Have any employers come up with some innovative ideas that you haven't had to sort of push on them? Because obviously, again, we're talking at people who are at a level in their career, be it male or female, who've, you know, got there by being bright and smart and, you know, thinking of interesting and different ways of doing things.
Before I was appointed, I was invited by the minister to go and meet with Whitbread Group Premier Inn. And as we walked in, she said to me, "You can't say why you're here," because she hadn't announced it in Parliament yet. And I was a bit like, "Oh, okay." So we did the intros and I just said, "Hello, I'm Helen from the Adecco Group." And they all sort of looked at me and said, "And what are you doing here?" But so we spent quite a lot of time with them, which was really interesting because they are very much focused on their teams of housekeepers. They have a very limited amount of time to clean and reset a room. And they were very aware of that, and they looked at their uniforms and what they could do to with their uniforms, which were already, I think, a natural fibre, but they gave them more uniforms so they could change more regularly, etc. But the innovative thing that they did, which I thought was really interesting, because you can't explain to somebody what it's like to have a hot flush, because it just, you've no control over it, and it is a feeling like you can't relate it to anything because of that lack of control and endless getting hotter. So they created like a menopause vest or jacket that they gave to their leadership team to wear under their shirts in senior meetings, but somebody else had control of the thermostat. So they would just go into a meeting. Nobody could see that they were wearing it because it was under their shirt, tie, suit, whatever, and they'd just crank up the heat in the middle of a conversation, and just to give an awareness of what an like out of control experience that it is. But I think that awareness piece is really important, because being able to describe it is one thing, being able to experience is entirely another, isn't it? And the other thing that the wellbeing of women group have done is some virtual reality work. That AI virtual reality is really prolific at the moment in a lot of areas, a lot of ways of recruiting people, getting people to join organizations, but they've done it so you can almost walk a mile in somebody's shoes who is experiencing perimenopause.
Both of those things sound great, and you've really made me realize that it's really not about a policy, it's really just about empathy and compassion, isn't it? And we all, to varying degrees, are full of empathy and compassion because we're human beings, and you know that's part of our natural traits. But I suppose you can only have empathy and compassion when you understand the problem, or completely, you can relate to it, or you can see it.
And I think the really interesting part about that is we use lived experience to underpin our whole ED&I strategy, and every topic that we've launched, we're driven by our data. So we look at where, you know, what we need to look at, and we that data, we've got the intersectionality in the data, so we can really dig deep and look at what it is that our people internally need. That drives our decision making for all our ED&I committee and the forums that sit beneath it. But what we try and do is when we launch a topic, we launch it through lived experience. Obviously, menopause was my lived experience and two colleagues, but we've launched so many topics through that lived experience. We've done men's mental health, baby loss, domestic abuse, you know, obviously our LGBTQ forum talk about their experiences, and that human element of it has absolutely changed the culture of the organization. So a policy would never do that. So that empathy comes from people who have either been through that experience as well, being able to form networks within the organization, and that's what makes the difference. And just being able to, you know, engage with a broad group of people. So we've got five generations in our workforce, as most large organizations have. So when we started, we were just talking about menopause, and the view was, well, we've only got this number of 50 plus. And then, so we've obviously started talking about perimenopause, because actually perimenopause is more symptomatic than menopause. Yeah. You're almost over it by then. And that can start at 41. So that naturally could start even earlier, obviously, because of early menopause, forced menopause, etc. But the average age is 41. So that, for us, opened up the conversation with a whole other group of people that had no idea almost why they felt like they did, because even 2-3 years ago, perimenopause wasn't widely talked about. It was just the catch-all menopause. And then we've started talking about period management, menstruation in the workplace, etc., which allows it, the conversation, to transcend the whole of the five generations in the workforce, and from the top end, you know, what life can be like post-menopause if it's managed well in the workplace, you retain the people in the workplace, what it can give the organization and the people in it as well. So we've broadened out that conversation. I'm delighted that the British Standards Institute have brought out their standard about 2 weeks ago, and it's the formal launch next week, but that is called Menstruation, Menstrual Health and Menopause in the Workplace. And I think the fact that it covers the three areas of it is so important. I think it's a real step forward as well for employers.
I just want to go back to that business of a production line, the housekeeping staff having to get X number of rooms done in a certain amount of time. You know, that is a really common thing, isn't it? What can happen in that situation? Could you have, would you have, I mean, I realise anything's possible, but have you had employers who would say to somebody, right, I'm going to take you off the production line completely, I'm going to retrain you, and you're now going to be, you know, in the accounts department? Is that completely unfeasible, you know, or you've got employers who are prepared to go that far to retain an employee, and also just to put their money where their mouth is when it comes to, you know, a policy on menopause?
I think there are employers that do, you know, regularly look at how you can upskill, reskill, move people into other roles in the, you know, talent mobility is really important to an organization. In leadership roles, women are leaving leadership roles faster than ever before, according to the 2022 McKinsey report. And the challenge is they're not being replaced by other female leaders. And the knock-on effect of that is if you can't see it, you can't be it. So less and less younger girls are aspired to be leaders. That's a real issue, because if you're losing people at that level and you can't replace them, so moving talent around to sustain their employment is really important. You know, we're in a talent scarce market, whatever sector you work in at the moment, unemployment is less than 4%. So there is a real challenge finding good people. So actually accommodating somebody, you know, obviously going from a production line to being working in accounts, I guess there could be a skill gap that could need bridging. But in order to retain people, most organizations would take positive steps and do what they could.
Let's talk about post-menopause. You said at the beginning of this chat that you were pretty much post-menopause now. The peri days are behind you, the flooding is behind you. How is that different for you? Are you in a more even keel and without that up down crazy fluctuation that you get in perimenopause?
Yeah, my husband will attest to the fact that I'm on a much more even keel. You know, if somebody had said to me when I was perimenopausal, do you want to take on this voluntary role? And it'll probably consume, you know, I don't know, however many hours a week, and you'll have all these people come in, want to talk to you, want, you know, want to interview you and stuff. There is no way I would have been able to even contemplate doing that. But I genuinely feel that I've got at least another sort of 15 years to work. And I still want to, you know, progress and develop. Did I feel like that probably 4 or 5 years ago? Probably not. But I think it's a combination of being post-menopause. You know, I take HRT. I don't think it's the golden bullet. I genuinely don't. Lifestyle changes have made equally probably as much difference as that. But yeah, I've got a million times more energy, and I'm doing something that I love. I guess that's a big part of it as well.
And I ask you that because I want to go on to ask you about other women that you've seen in the workplace, because I think more and more this podcast is becoming about you know, thriving in menopause, thriving beyond menopause, flourishing, you know, what is on the other side of this? Because really, you know, we're living so much longer than we used to. Menopausing, anecdotally, it's looking like that might be starting to get earlier. Mm-hmm. And so we've got this big, long time in the workplace and hopefully beyond the workplace. Mm-hmm. And so I'm interested to hear from you any sort of experiences or examples of women that you've seen really thrive beyond menopause and really kind of, you know, wow you.
I am so lucky. We take it for granted. We never think about it, I don't think, because I've always worked in probably a very female dominated environment because of the nature of the industry that I've been in. I work with some incredibly inspirational women, so we kind of take it for granted, but a lot of us have been on that journey together because we've worked together or known each other for such a long time. So I'm surrounded by inspirational women, which is fabulous, but a lot of women that are working in this space, in the menopause space commercially, and there are an awful lot, tend to be post-menopausal women who feel so passionate about either they had a great experience or they had a terrible experience, but they want to make it better for other women. But the only thing I would say about that is that the media representation has been incredible. Obviously, that has changed the dial a lot. I had brain fog then. I couldn't think of a better word than a lot.
We could go with dramatically if you like.
Dramatically, that's so much a better word. However, I would say that being a celebrity and going through menopause is very different to working on a production line, being a nurse, being a teacher and going through menopause. So yeah, it can actually be a negative to maybe look at somebody and think, let's use Davina as a brilliant example. She's incredible. She looks incredible. You know, she's got it all together. That probably isn't that helpful if you've just come off a 12-hour shift on a production line and you are absolutely on your knees emotionally, physically, mentally, that you think, I need to really be like that. So that is, you know, it's brilliant to have those inspirational role models. But I also think that the inspiration is women who are doing the very best they can for themselves, their families, etc., and really struggling to get through. And those are the women that I really want to make it better for.
Yeah, and I absolutely agree with you. I guess what I'm driving at is the, you know, you mentioned women leaving senior roles and then not coming back to it. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of interested in the women who've either ridden that storm, they've either managed to stay, or maybe they have left a role, but then they've come back to something else. Because, you know, I'm a big believer in the fact that change is the root of all growth. You don't grow without change. Yeah. And sometimes a change, you know, I'm using the word the change, which of course is the old fashioned term for the menopause. But, you know, often when a change happens, it can be forced on you, you know, and you don't want to make that change and you feel terrified that the norm, you know, normal is going to stop and it's going to be different. And I think that in itself be a symptom of perimenopause and menopause, you know, alongside the other symptoms you're suffering, the out of control, the lack of understanding about a lot of what these changes are, and just this feeling like you're not yourself. I mean, I hear that so many times. It was definitely where I started from when I spoke to my GP. I just don't feel like me. The doctor was like, well, that's not really a medical thing, you know. Not feeling like you.
I did like a coaching course last year to see what was out there in the sort of menopause space long before I was even, you know, considered for this role. And there was a lady on there that had been a very senior operations director in the aerospace industry, and she'd had to leave because she felt like she just couldn't do it anymore. And she was going to set up as a coach, or, you know, a menopause specialist coach. And I kept in touch with her after the course, and she has actually gone back into the aerospace arena, which very male dominated. But had she not taken that time out, had those experiences, you know, really got the support that she needed, she wouldn't have been able to go back into that role. So I think, you know, the more support that we provide, the less women will have to leave. But if they do leave, there's a better understanding that it could just be, you know, a snapshot in time, and then they can go back and really thrive. I don't know if you know, but EasyJet are doing a campaign at the moment to basically get more women over, I think it's 45, back into being cabin crew for them. And I think it's a really good strategy, because they're basically saying, if you wanted to be a cabin crew when you were, you know, young, don't think that that, I don't think they do say ship has sailed, because obviously that wouldn't work because they're an airline. But don't think that that, you know, ship has sailed just because you're 45. You know, if your kids have left home, don't be sat at home with your husband. Come and work for us and travel the world, which is a really exciting advertising strategy. And they've been inundated.
I was going to say, give me ideas, Helen. You give me ideas.
But the way they sell it,
my feet are very achy these days. I'm not sure I could be up and down those aisles. Might need roller skates.
But also, that is the key, isn't it? What is their strategy to support women when they come back in? Because like to your point, it's not an easy job. You know, you're on your feet all the time at altitude, and it's probably exhausting. So, you know, have they got the right uniforms? Have they, you know, considered the length of the shifts and all of that? Because it is a very physical job. So I think it's brilliant that that concept is there to bring women back who can really go on and thrive. But I just hope that they've got everything, you know.
Hope they thought it through, Helen.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, yeah, but it's great to see women who are thriving post-menopause. Mm. And I think we also need to remember that actually it's only sort of two or three generations ago that you didn't really live beyond menopause. So it's a relatively new concept to be postmenopausal, and what does life look like, and life for, you know, middle-aged to later life women has changed so much, even from the last generation. So you know, it's constantly evolving.
Well, you know, that's a really good point you make about the woman from the aerospace industry who had to stop and then was able to get back in, because I think, although we don't want people to leave jobs, be forced out of jobs by their symptoms, and we don't want, you know, people's kind of career to be derailed, you know, through the menopause, it's also okay to stop.
Yes,
it's also okay to say,
if it's your choice, it is okay. But if you feel you've no choice,
yes, of course. But it is also okay to stop, of course, take stock if you're in a financial position to do that, because that, you know, just another thing, going back to being women, we're very scared often to show a weakness and to show a chink of, you know, doubt in yourself, because then you worry. But it's okay to stop and get off the treadmill, maybe regroup and think about, well, what treadmill do I want to get back on? Or, you know, do I want to get back on it at all? Don't want women listening to, oh no, I have to like carry on climbing the ladder forever.
Absolutely not. But as the key thing is, it's got to be, if it can be your choice, it's a much better experience, because actually, like we said earlier, you know, we've got to work longer and longer. But going off and doing something entirely different, there is nothing wrong with that. But if, as long as it's your choice and you don't feel like you've been forced out, pushed out, because there is absolutely no need to be.
Helen Tomlinson, the government-appointed menopause employment champion and all-round big cheese, it's been absolutely fabulous having you on My Last Legs. Thanks for chatting today.
Absolute pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Rachel. Thank you.
Thanks again to Helen Tomlinson. Next week, we have one of the directors of Menopause Mandate, Laura Biggs, on the podcast. You can follow On My Last Legs with new episodes released every Wednesday from Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Have a great week.